going to start this morning with a legend, a gentleman who I consider a dear friend, who I've learned so much from. His name is T. Boone Pickens. Yes. Tell me, you've had an amazing journey in the oil business, in the energy business. Period. It's a very volatile business. Tell us, where do you see it today? I mean, you see the price of oil has dropped so much, and I think last time we talked, you started talking about all the production being shut down and thinking that would affect the price of oil and bring it back. Tell us what your view is. Where is oil today? Why is it where it is, and where do you see it going?
Well, today it's about $32, $33 a barrel, and it got down as low as $26.19. I think that was the low, and that we're working our way back up now. And by the end of the year, I think you'll be back to $50 a barrel. At one time, it was $147 a barrel, just for a minute, though. But we were above $100 a barrel for some time.
Yes.
And so when the price dropped, who did it hurt? Well, it hurt OPEC for sure. It hurt the Russians, and it hurt the oil and gas producers in the United States. Actually, it helped the consumer in the United States, which is good. It helped consumers all over the world. But today, the world is using 95 million barrels a day, and we're growing at about 1.5 million barrels a year, a day, every year. So next year, it'll be 96.5 million barrels. And within, by 2020, you'll be up to 100 million barrels of oil required. So there's a lot of oil around the world, but the business can't grow at $33 a barrel. You have to have a higher price, and the price will get higher.
And with China's interesting economy right now, does that affect how soon that occurs in terms of the supply and demand? What do you think will push the price back up?
The price back up is because everybody's quit drilling. We had, in November of 2014, we had 1,600 rigs drilling for oil. Today, we have 400.
400? So, wow.
That's right. Wow. And 7 years ago, we had 1,400 rigs drilling for gas, for natural gas, and today we have 200. So you pretty well shut down the drilling of oil and gas in the United States.
Wow. So if you were giving an investor an idea of where you think oil will be the end of the year, you think it'll be where?
I think it'll be $50 a barrel.
Right.
And what happens once you hit bottom, and maybe 26.19 was not the bottom, but I think it was. If that was the case, 12 months later, you're usually up 100% from your low point. So you'd be $52 a barrel if that played out again.
Makes sense. Tell me, what do you see, and you look at the world economy as a whole, what's your view of where things are going? You have, feds all over the world that are now doing negative interest rates. You got quantitative easing being maximized, and yet, the economies, most economies in the world are not responding. What's your view of where the world's going and how we should look at things as investors?
Well, if you want to look at, Europe is, I would say, is socialistic in their approach to government. And we have a candidate, Bernie Sanders, is right there pitching that European model. But if you look around the world and if you ask the people, where would you rather live than any place else in the world? It'd be the United States.
Yep.
Well, why is that? Why does everybody want to live here? Is because we have the best economy, the best opportunity. People in America have a chance if they want to work hard. And you don't exactly have to have a college education to be successful. If you're skilled and you're a good worker, I think there's no problem. But if you look at the unemployed in the United States, the skilled workers, they're employed. I mean, there's anybody that's skilled and has good work ethic, they have a job. And so who is it that doesn't have a job? You have a lot of people in this country that would like to have a socialistic government, let the government pretty well feed them. And that I don't think, well, you can see I'm 87 years old, and I'm talking to you from my office today. I go to work every day at 7:30 in the morning. And is every day perfect? Of course not. The Lord never said this life was perfect, but it's been good. And you have up days, down days, but it's been a pretty good life.
Pretty extraordinary. Tell me, you know, what do we need in a leader today? What makes somebody a great leader? What are the principles from your perspective of effective leadership?
Well, I'll tell you what, we haven't seen much.
I have to agree with you.
It's a sad case for this president, because he hadn't shown us much leadership. So maybe whoever we get coming up, it's going to look good, because they're going to be better than what we've had. And we'll see.
Well, when you talk about... Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Leadership is what's been missing for a few years.
And what do you think are the most important qualities of an effective leader?
Well, I'm keen about once again, I believe you have to have a good work ethic. I'm not talking about the president of the United States that he's got to, be involved in a lot of things. And you say what's best. You've got to spend the weekend playing golf. It costs the country $10 million. I think that's a little high green fees. And, if you want to play golf in Washington. So.
Yeah.
but we have a lot to do in this country. We owe a lot of money. Somebody's got to figure out how to pay that off. And the answer isn't Bernie or Hillary's solution to it, is to tax somebody and pay it off that way. I don't think anybody, taxes to me are a high class problem. I mean, you're making money if you're paying taxes, and that's good. But you can't run up $18 trillion in debt like we have in the last 8 years. And so we've got to do something better than that.
What's the solution to that debt? The numbers are so high when you take, Social Security and the unfunded liabilities of Medicare and Medicaid. It's over $100 trillion when you add all that in. Can that ever be paid back? What happens?
I'm not sure. I'm not an economist, but I believe this, that you have the cheapest energy in the world in the United States, one, and you can build your economy back on cheap energy. Cheap energy will trump cheap labor. And you just got to get some leadership in there and take advantage of the cheap energy that we have in America. And you can bring companies back into the United States that have left, because energy is a big part of, we have paid out over $1 trillion for foreign oil. Well, $1 trillion is a small part of $18 trillion in debt is what we have, but it's a place to start. And your economy grow at 5%. I think you can pay the $18 trillion off over time.
Right. That makes sense. Tell me, one of the most powerful pieces of you as a leader in the past is, you've had the guts to make the tough decisions. And almost every great leader does that. We had George Bush was here yesterday, and we had a really wonderful conversation with him about the biggest decisions of his presidency. What are some of the biggest decisions you've made of your life, two or three, that have profoundly affected the direction or quality of your life? And share with us your philosophy about decision-making. You've talked to me in the past about how most people aim. You know, tell us how you look at things differently around decisions.
You remember that. I said that there are people that are in leadership roles that never can pull the trigger. They get ready, aim, and they can't ever fire. Meaning they can't pull the trigger to make a big decision. But the big decisions I've made have all been in the energy area. And I haven't made any decisions that impacted something globally. But I think I could if I had decided to go in that direction. Yes. But I didn't. If you're going to make big decisions, you got to think big. And if you look at what's going on in the world today, you know, you've got four wars going over in the Mideast right now. And there's a lot of problems. And you're going to have to get a president now that can actually, you know, what's happened to us in the Mideast is that we've kind of backed out there. We still have the Fifth Fleet, I know, in the Persian Gulf, and it's based out of Bahrain. But you're sitting there now. The Russians have moved back in to the Mideast in the Syrian deal. Yep. I don't know what they have in mind. I had a feeling that they want to rebuild the Russian empire. And they've taken the Crimea and the Ukraine back, but the country is really struggling now because oil is so cheap, and it is killing. It's probably costing them somewhere around $500 million a day. Wow. The price of oil. They produce 10 million barrels of oil a day, and Saudis do too. We're producing a little bit under 9 million a day. And those are the three biggest producers in the world.
Wow. Yeah, pretty hard for him to build his empire. He's having to distract people because the economy is in shambles because of the price of oil currently. What do you think of the Iran deal, and how does Iran coming online affect the price of oil?
Well, the Iranians they actually have cheated on their sanctions. And, you know from satellite that they've been moving oil across Iraq all the time they have had sanctions put on them. So by truck is the way they moved it. And you're in a spot now in Iran. What can they add to the world oil supply? And I am not too keen. I think I've seen where some people have forecasts maybe 1 million barrels a day. I think it's probably closer to 200,000 or 300,000 barrels a day.
Okay. So it won't be the same scale that some people think it is. That's interesting. Okay. Audience for Mr. Pickens. Yes.
Hi, Mr. Pickens. An honor to speak with you. Is there I know it probably varies, but a break-even price on the per barrel?
Well, you know, you have different producing areas. The three producing areas that have come from the horizontal drilling are the Bakken up in North Dakota and the Eagle Ford in South Texas. And then West Texas is the Permian. And the West Texas is by far the biggest. But you've got to have $50 a barrel, I think, to put the rigs back to work. Now, somebody will say, yeah, and you're looking at Saudis that only cost them $5 a barrel to produce their oil. That isn't exactly right. They have social commitments there. They actually, to meet their budget requirements, they have to have $100 a barrel. So they are now losing about $500 million a day or maybe a little greater than that. And their cash reserves have come down from $800 billion to $600 billion. And they have borrowed money this year for the first time to meet their social commitments. So, and the only economy they have in Saudi Arabia is oil, is their oil production. So we're all high cost producers now. It's expensive to produce oil.
And is with the changes that are happening, why is the OPEC not holding back on their production, or have they begun to?
Well, if you look at what happened, it's always the Saudis have always been the swing producer, and then the United States oil production went down. We peaked in 1970 at 10 million barrels a day, and then we came down to 4 million barrels a day, and now we brought our production back up to 9.7, and now it has declined below 9 million barrels a day. But I gave you a lot of numbers real fast there. But the Saudis said, you be the swing producer, United States, that we're tired of doing that. And we're going to produce at 10.5 million a day, and we're not going to cut production. Now they are talking about capping production, not increasing production. Well, I don't think the Saudis can increase their production. I think they had 10.7 for the last year, and I didn't think they could sustain that level. So they're talking about not increasing. Well, they're not going to increase. The world can't increase now because they've shut down all the rigs around the world. And there's activity in Iraq. Their production is now peaked at about 4.5 million barrels a day, and it will it'll start declining because they're not drilling, and so this is going to work its way out, because if you're not drilling, you're not going to add any production, so it'll start to decline.
Tell me when you look at the growth in solar. Is that you're saying that the reason that we won't see the dent in petroleum use is because solar still, because of the battery technology, can't push these big rigs, which is where basically all goods are transported on trucks today. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, you'll use a battery for light duty. That's fine, but use it for heavy duty if you can get that kind of battery. So I'm just a person that's I'm a realist about the use of energy. I know you have to have it. When you have Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton saying they're against fossil fuels, okay, let's say get rid of fossil fuels. We'll go back 95 million barrels a day is being used, 95 million barrels of oil a day, and 70% of that goes to transportation. What are they going to use? Get realistic. It's fine, get rid of fossil fuels, but I don't think we're ready to go back to the bicycle or walk. be real about the issues. And when they say get rid of fossil fuels, they're not being realistic.
But the question I have is, I know that, I don't know whether it was 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago, you were pushing to put natural gas along the major highways for, the tractors and trailers to use. And that's what I think you were trying to get through the Senate and Congress, I believe. And I for the life of me, I couldn't understand why our politicians wouldn't back that, because oil was up at 70, 80, 100 bucks a barrel. I own tractors and trailers. I know how expensive it is when diesel's at 350, 375. And it just made all the sense in the world to me. And, for you to lose by 3 votes, can you tell me, was it just strictly a political type thing? What's the reason, I guess, is what I'm asking.
There's a lot of natural gas used for 18-wheelers at this time, and natural gas highway exists on the interstates. So there's LNG and CNG, liquefied natural gas and compressed natural gas, available to trucks, and that's all happening. It is happening. The key, maybe a game changer, that it is well known, but I think the trucking industry is probably aware of it. But Cummins, a big engine manufacturer, they have now come up with a 9-liter engine that is 90% less NOx than any other engine. It's cleaner than the battery. So it's going to happen. It's happening. The way I was asking for the government to give us some help was on a, would be on a it was a tax deal, but it was not a subsidy. So but natural gas is going to replace diesel. It will happen because natural gas is so much cleaner than diesel is.
I'm on the East Coast, and we don't see gas stations, natural gas available to tractors and trailers in any kind of scale, at least in the Northeast, anyhow. But you're saying in the West, it's happening pretty heavily right now.
Oh, you have it in the East too. Just look around, check with Clean Energy Fuels, and they will give you where all the stations are located. But they're actually, you are replacing natural gas there, fuel oil and other oils, because it is cleaner and it is cheaper. But it's not that much cheaper right now because that diesel for you is cheap. I mean, and you like it, and you should like it but the price going to go back up. You're going to be looking at $3.50 diesel at some point. You know you probably are as oil prices recover here. But natural gas is available to you if you just check with Clean Energy Fuels, and they'll give you a catalog that'll show you all the stations.
Thank you very much. I wasn't aware of that. I'll look into it. Thank you.
Been reading all these articles and stuff about driverless cars and driverless semi-trucks in 5 to 10 years. And I guess my question for you is that realistic? And if so, how will that affect the oil market, especially in our country?
Yes, it is realistic. The first time I heard it, I thought it scared me to death to be coming down the highway and coming upon a 18-wheeler coming towards me. It would be a driverless tractor. Well, one, I don't have to worry about that anymore because I don't drive on the highway. So at my age, I drive on my ranch, but don't drive on streets or highways. Is it going to happen? Yes, it's going to happen. And when it does happen, fuel will be it'll be interesting because you'll get better fuel efficiency when that happens. But I don't think there's any doubt. Fred Smith, the founder and CEO of FedEx, he and I were talking about this subject a month ago, and he's convinced that it will happen. Now you asked me a while ago about mentors. I would look at Fred Smith as a mentor. If he told me something was going to happen, I'd believe it. But he said, you're going to have driverless trucks for sure.
Tell us, what do you consider, just to wrap up, Boone, what do you consider the biggest challenge facing America, and what are you most optimistic about? What is our greatest opportunity or opportunities in your mind?
Well, it's incredible the natural resources that America has. And I've talked about them, so I won't be repetitious on those remarks. Cheap fuel, and those resources will pay off for us. I think that there's no question that the tech industry is unbelievable what they've done, and more will come there. And when you talk about driverless car, we wouldn't even spend 15 seconds on that subject 5 years ago or 10 years ago. So these things are happening very fast. Same way with medical research, you are having, MD Anderson Hospital, for instance, they have done unbelievable job. They call it moonshot, but they have brought, I think, 15 cancers in to, where they can manage and really treat those cancers and expect to get great results. So medical research, the tech industry, the energy, it's all there. They're great opportunities in America today for young people.
Boone, you are a national treasure. We are grateful for you. You're such an example. You're such a humble man for all that you've contributed to society. And I just want to personally thank you. Big hand for Boone Dickens.
Thank you.